Welcome to the Where Do Gays Retire podcast, where we help you in the LGBTQ plus community find a safe and affordable retirement place. Join Mark Goldstein as he interviews others who live in gay-friendly places around the globe. Learn about the climate, cost of living, healthcare, crime and safety, and more. Now, here's your host, Mark Goldstein.
Today, we're going to take you to El Pescadero, Mexico, part of Baja California Sur. We have our guest, Lou Gallo, with us, and I'll tell you a little bit about Lou. Lou was born in Anaheim, California. Him and his family moved to San Francisco area when he was 9 years old. The move was not unfamiliar to Lou and his siblings. His parents were known to take Sunday drives. As it would get later in the day and no sign of his parents, Lou's older sister would start to cry, but Lou was filled with excitement. You little rascal, you. This usually meant that their parents found a new home to buy and for Lou, a new place to discover and new friends to make. He was really excited. It was the excitement of discovery and anticipation of meeting new people that have flourished with time. After visiting Los Cabos on a quick weekend getaway with friends, Lou was captivated by the beauty of the ocean, terrain, and the people of Baja Sur. The practically perfect weather and delicious cuisine only added to its allure. Lou went home, gave his notice at work, and was living in Cabo 3 months later. Now, with 4+ years of living the Cabo life, Lou has become known for bringing people together and sharing his love for all that is Cabo. He has earned a reputation for taking exceptional care of his buyers and sellers he represents, making sure to go the extra mile to get the best deal possible. Whether it's a high-rise condo or high-end beachfront property, Lou knows the ins and outs of Los Cabos and the surrounding neighborhoods. Before entering real estate, Lou had a successful furniture and interior design career, focusing on superior quality and unique sustainable design. He has a discerning eye for architecture and the appreciation of community. Combine that with a genuine concern for people and ability to hear their specific needs and wants, and you'll see what drives Lou to the best at what he does. Lou has had the opportunity to travel the world for both work and for pleasure. For his design work, he spent a lot of time in Asia and Europe. During this time, he found a deep love for Vietnam and considering living there at one point. Lucca, Italy was also on the list of places to live, but since his parents were getting up there in age, he wanted to focus on places closer to the U.S. After crossing Puerto Vallarta and Palm Springs off the list, he discovered San Jose del Cabo and knew he found his new home. So Lou has a long list of things that he did on his resume. He, of course, started off, he was an owner of a hair salon. He designed and built wood furniture. And he, at present, formed a partnership to create Gallo 64. And we ask what Gallo 64 is. And Gallo 64 is a community where he lives that he is building. And he'll tell you a little bit about that as well. So Lou, welcome to the podcast. Thanks so much for coming. And tell us, why did you choose Pescadero? We'll call it Pescadero instead of El Pescadero.
Sure. First of all, thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about Gallo 64.
Sure.
And it is El Pescadero, but most people just call it Pescadero. Most of the locals, yeah.
Why did you choose Pescadero amongst any other place on the earth?
I really love, you know, Baja Sur, which is the lower part of the Baja Peninsula. And Los Cabos is great. I really love being there. And San Jose del Cabo is in Los Cabos. It's a beautiful town, but it's becoming more populated and more congested. And I wanted something that was a little bit more remote feeling. I also love the opportunity of being somewhere at the beginning, so you can be part of the growth. And Pescadero is just now starting to grow. Matter of fact, people like Gwyneth Paltrow and Jennifer Aniston have discovered it, which is a good thing and a bad thing, because as soon as they do it, then everyone wants to be there.
Everybody else wants, yeah.
Exactly. But the main part is Baja Sur, it's a desert. It's dry. If you fly over it during the day, you're going to see brown, and then you're going to see this little green stripe. And that part of that stripe is Pescadero. And it's because it's part of the Tropic of Cancer. So just the wind currents and the moisture is different than the rest of Baja. So it's actually a farm community in the middle of a desert. And it's also coastal, which is unusual. So when I was thinking about what I want to be able to do when I retire, one of the things is I like gardening. I like to be able to do that. And being in Pescadero would allow that. And it's also because it's more rich in water than the rest of Baja. We can have grounds with vegetables and orchards and flowers and things like that, which would be curated. So the homeowners have the opportunity to do their own gardens, but there would also be maintained gardens where they could go out and pick their own fruit and vegetables and flowers.
So more like a farm-to-table community.
Very much. And it's interesting. Everything's farm-to-table here, and it's always been farm-to-table, but the locals have just known that us Americans love farm-to-table, so now they put farm-to-table, but it's pretty much always been farm-to-table.
Gotcha. So tell us a little bit now, might as well tell us about Gallo 64. How did you get that name? What are your intentions of building it up to? Just tell us about how that started.
Sure. First of all, I have two business partners. They're both Mexican. One is Paulina, and she is the architect, and Alex is the builder. They're an architect and builder that worked together a lot already in Los Cabos, and I was a fan of their product. They design and build beautiful homes, and it was actually kind of funny because I met with them one day, and Alex was saying, oh, we love the clients that you're bringing in. And I jokingly go, you mean gay? And he kind of stopped for a minute. And I said, it's okay if you say it's gay. And he's like, well, actually, yes, that's not the main part. Just people who appreciate modern architecture is really what I'm looking at, not necessarily gay people. So I told him my vision that I had always wanted to do this community, a small community where it could be start off as like more of a vacation community, possibly rental income, then with the idea of you can transition into living there for retirement. And the name we came up with because, again, there's so many cheesy names in Mexico that are marketed towards Americans. It's always like rancho or estates or villas. And I didn't love any of those names. And also, I don't want it to sound like an old folk home. So going back and forth, and we were really hung up. We were like 2 months into it, we didn't come up with the name. And then actually, I think it was Alex said, why don't we use your name? It's something you're passionate about. So we were trying to do like Rancho Gallo, and we decided to call it Gallo instead of Gallo. So Rancho Gallo, and a friend of mine who does marketing said, I think it should be a number. So it's actually Gallo 64, and 64 is the road marker that you turn off of to go to Gallo 64.
Sounds good. Yeah, I think it's a great marketing.
Sure, yeah. And it's marketing-wise, it sounds good. Visually, you can do a lot with it. It's a rooster.
Yep.
Gallo or Gallo in Italian or Spanish is rooster. Or I jokingly say, or cock.
There you go.
Yeah.
Or Gallo, G-U-Y-O. Very good. Very good. So yeah, congratulations on that. And how many units will it have?
There's actually going to be 11 houses. They're all individual houses. And that part's interesting because we were originally shooting for 18. And Pescadero, the town of Pescadero, what they've done is it's frustrating, but in the long run, I think it's a really great thing what they're doing is they keep reducing the amount of, and the reason they're doing this is they see the popularity and they don't want it to become a Tulum or a Cabo. They don't want it to be really crowded. It is farmland and they'd like to maintain that as much as possible. So they're only allowing two-story buildings. They're not allowing large structures. And they're keeping the infill pretty sparse. So we went from the 18 to 11. And at first we were going to try to fight it because we had started before they had changed the zoning. But as we talked about it, I agree with it. And my partners agree with it, that if we try to change it, then it gives someone else the right to change it. So we decided to respect that and stick with the 11 homes. And I'm okay with that, actually. I think that there's that nice size of people. You know, I had a hair salon, and when I had 11 or 12 employees, it was this really close-knit, tight. And then once I got to like 28 employees,
it gets a little out of hand.
Exactly. Starts to get more conflict, less like-minded people. So I'm very happy with the number of 11 homes.
So how large are these homes?
They're going to be AC, you know, the interiors. They're going to be around 2,700 square feet to 3,000 square feet.
That's so large.
They're nice-sized homes. They're very spacious. They're 3 and 4 bedroom. And something that we've done is like, I did a lot of research about, there's a lot of communal living happening right now. Me and you have discussed this in the past. And a lot of the communal living have like a communal kitchen where people come together. And I do love that concept, but I am a true gay man. I love my kitchen. I love my stuff. I love entertaining. So we've designed the homes. They're very easy to have groups of people in your house and to entertain. But everyone has their own individual kitchen. Nice big pantries. Those are things that were important to me. But the concept is there are 11 houses. There's no roads on the interior of the property. There's 3 driveways around the exterior, and your garages are at the exterior. All of the paths interior are all designed to create interaction. So you walk by neighbors' homes. You can walk into the garden. If you're in the garden, your neighbor may be in the garden picking vegetables the same time as you. But we've also created kind of little private courtyards, because there's going to be no actual fences within the community, but each house has its own sort of private courtyard. So you still do have that intimacy if you want it. There's a community pool, and next to the community pool, we're now negotiating with a local farmer. She's been farming in that area for 20 years. She not only is a very successful farmer, she has an amazing grocery store, which is about 5 minutes from Gaia 64. And it's a really cool Mexican version of Whole Foods. It's fresh baked goods. They do gluten-free. They've got a coffee shop. They have a rotisserie with local chickens and meats that are cooked. They have to-go salads, fresh produce. She's famous for her strawberries and cream, which she grows the strawberries fresh. And then next door to that, she has a restaurant, which I actually think is one of the best restaurants in Baja Sur. And she owns the lot next to me, and we're negotiating her opening a little restaurant. So when we're at the pool, you can have food and beverage when you're at the community pool, which is great.
Nice.
And we're also talking with her about curating the gardens. So she'll maintain the vegetable gardens and the flowers and stuff like that.
Okay. So is it sort of like you have common areas with, like, the garden will be common area? Will there be any other like common areas so everybody can share and build community?
We do. We have the gardens, we have the swimming pool, and then we also have a room that we're building that's sort of going to be like a gym and a yoga studio. And something that we're doing is we're keeping it large, like fairly nice size, but we're not packing it with a lot of stuff. And then there'll be a rooftop terrace. And actually, even though we're not selling ocean view lots, from there, you will have an ocean view. One of the reasons we're not is we don't know, there's a little space between us and the beach, and if someone builds a two-story, you're going to lose the ocean view.
Right.
And this isn't what it's about. Our community is about farming and gardening and community, but at the same time, you're 10 minutes from the beach, so it is very close to the beach. And then back to the amenities. The gym building, we kind of leaving it. What I have found is, you know, I'm a realtor and I go into these condo buildings and they've got these giant gyms with all this equipment, or they've got certain specific things and no one in the community uses them. And it just becomes an eyesore and a maintenance. So there's only going to be 11 homeowners. So the idea is to build a really nice palette or template for us as homeowners to decide what we want to do. So there will be some gym equipment and room for yoga, but at some point, if they're like, oh, there's a gym down the street, let's turn this into an art studio. It's something that the homeowners can decide to do. There's also enough room where we could add a pickleball court if we want to do a pickleball court. But again, we're trying to keep it so it could constantly evolve as the homeowners choose to make it their own.
Right, right. Well, it sounds great. Yeah, building community, and I've mentioned this before too, building community is so important, especially to the LGBTQ plus community, because as we age, we really do rely upon friends. We may not have family at that point, you know, either, you know, our loved ones might have passed away or we don't have siblings to take care of us. So it's always good to find places that people take care of people.
Exactly. You know, especially our generation, you know, some of the younger generations are starting to have children now, but it was a little more difficult for our generation. So we don't have kids. This became really apparent. My mom passed away almost 3 years ago and she has four kids. And for the last 4 months of her life, it was all four of ours full-time job to make sure she got the care she needed.
Yeah.
So that really got me thinking about it. Also during COVID, we have a place here called Flora Farms and they sell fractionals. And for those of you who don't know what a fractional is, because I didn't know what it was until I moved here, it's sort of like timeshare, but it's, you're actually purchasing the place you're staying at. So you, Flora Farms does it for 2 weeks. So you own like the first 2 weeks of December every year, you can turn around and sell them and they do go up in value just like a home does. It's pricey. For 2 weeks, it's about anywhere from $180 to $300 or $300,000. But what I found was during COVID, I made friends with people who were staying there. And a lot of them were quarantining there and we quarantined together. And what most of them told me was, even though they'd only been going there for 4 to 6 years, they felt closer with their friends from this fractional that they see either 2 weeks or 4 weeks out of the year than they do with friends that they've been known for 30, friends 40 with. Years. Yeah. And part of the reason is we're on vacation, we're open. You meet people for drinks, you go to restaurants together, you're just open. And so the whole concept of Guy 64 is you vacation there and maybe you're only there 2 weeks out of December or 2 months out of the year, but they're the same people you're next door to and you become friends with them. So when the time does come for you to retire, you're moving in with family. You're not moving to a new place where you know nobody. They're going to be either gay or like-minded people. And also you can also share expenses. You know, let's say we get to a point where we don't want to drive anymore. We could buy a van together and hire a driver. Same with cleaning services, all of that type of stuff. It's everything can be shared. And we've also created casitas in the units so that they're individual units. They have their own entry. That way you could rent it and make money. Or as you get up there in age, if you wanted a live-in caretaker, you have a live-in caretaker.
Nice. Do you anticipate anybody living there full-time?
Yeah, I will be living there full-time. And so far, there's a couple who's very interested, who I just started talking to this last week, and they plan on living there full-time in the next 2 to 3 years. The rest of the people are planning anywhere from a 5 to 10 year turnaround time to live there. But most of them like are planning on at least, you know, 2 to 6 months out of the year.
That's great. That's so exciting. And you broke ground, you said?
We did. Tuesday we started just clearing the lots and we're going to start marking the lots. Some of the boundaries of the fence that was existing is on other people's yards, lots and vice versa. So we're getting all that straightened out. And we're excited. We'll actually break ground and start building in January, the actual homes.
Okay. And people could go to your website and check it out?
You can go to my website, and it's got my email on the website. It's gallo64.com. And I was going to say something else, darn, about that. Oh, well, it'll come to me at some point. Oh, I know what I was going to say is, you know, talking about like retirement and relocating, there's nothing sexy about that. And we worked really hard in designing Guy 64. It's beautiful. And you don't walk in and think, oh, this is made for elderly people. We have kept in mind doorways being wide enough, showers, you know, things like that could be adapted easily. There will be paved paths from the plate, from the, you know, garage to the house, from the house to the swimming pool and things like that. But then there'll be other little gravel paths throughout. So we want to make sure that it's accessible as we get older. But everyone so far who's been involved are really vibrant, healthy people. So I don't want people to feel like this is where old people are going to be moving. You know, we have people in their early 40s on up to their 60s so far who are looking to invest or who have already invested.
Okay, I was going to say, so it's not a 55 plus community.
And you know, in our marketing, we don't say gay either. I feel as someone who grew up in an area where I could have been discriminated for being a gay man, I wouldn't want to discriminate against somebody else. We are very, all of our advertising money is going towards the gay community. And it's funny because I do say gay, not LGBTQ. Like I said, everybody's, it's all inclusive. Anyone's welcome, gay, straight, you know, but our target market is gay men. I mean, it's just like-minded people who are going to enjoy each other's company. That being said, I have a lesbian couple who's very interested, and I have a straight couple, two straight couples who are very interested, and a single straight person. So if somebody is interested in buying, I let them know that it's going to, the majority is going to be gay men. And if they're okay with that, we would love them to be part of the community.
Yeah. Yeah, I see nothing wrong with that.
Yeah,
if they're okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
So yeah, congratulations. That's so exciting.
Thank you.
That's very exciting. And it sounds like just a wonderful, that whole area of Pescadero and Baja Sur, it sounds so nice. I was just watching YouTubes and they have some of the beautiful beaches.
We have beautiful beaches. It's, I think, what California may have been like in the 50s and 60s in the sense of lots of unpaved roads, beautiful farmland, and you don't really have a town in Pescadero. What you do is you'll be driving down the road and there'll be a little restaurant tucked away or a little shop tucked away, but the food's amazing. You have Todos Santos, which is a 15-minute, maybe 20-minute drive, and that's a little old pueblo, and it's beautiful, great restaurants and art galleries. They do a lot of things like they have a wine festival, a chili festival, a music festival. I mean, they always have activities going on there. And like I said, it's a 15-minute drive. Cabo San Lucas is an hour away, and San Jose del Cabo is an hour and 25 minutes away. So airport, an hour drive from the airport. Actually, you have two airports, La Paz and San Jose del Cabo, both an hour away.
So if we're looking at the map of Baja California Sur, where is it located in retrospect to everything?
So Cabo San Lucas is at the very tip, like the toe, where the toe of it is. So it's on the Pacific side. And if you go up just a little bit, like of Baja Sur, it's probably maybe a 16th of the way up from the tip to the top. Pretty easy to find. If Pescadero is not marked, Todos Santos would be marked, and we're right next to Todos Santos.
Okay. So is living in an LGBTQ community important to you? And I guess by the way of Gallo 64, it is.
You know, it's funny because I grew up in the Bay Area and I had a hair salon in San Francisco and then I had a store in Phoenix, and never in my career did I market towards gay people. I just did my business and it was whatever. And then when I moved to Cabo, partially I knew I wanted to create a community with like-minded people. And it's hard. It doesn't have to be gay people, but the tendency of people having the same, a lot of the same thoughts, humor, like, you know, tendencies are right. My gay friends. So that's kind of what created it. I do have to tell you, even though Cabo San Lucas, Baja Sur, the whole area, there's not a lot of like gay bars and there's not that gay scene like you get at Puerto Vallarta, but you don't need it. The restaurants and the people are, I don't even want to say open. They're just, they don't care. I'm shocked at how many times if I'm having dinner with a man and the waiter or waitress will ask us if it's like, is this your birthday? Are you celebrating an anniversary? First of all, they don't have to be politically correct like they do in the United States, so they can just say it as it is. But I've lived in San Francisco, Phoenix, Dallas, and Raleigh. And as far as being gay, I feel the safest when I'm in San Jose del Cabo at this point.
Wow.
I really do. I started doing these parties pre-COVID called Dandy, and the whole idea was I marketed them, and I tried to even market them to attract older gay men because I knew the younger gay kids were starved and would show up no matter what. And they actually were quite successful. We were getting about 30 or 40 guys every other Friday. And then I stopped during COVID, but I did do also Gay Getaways, which I call Dandy as well. And I had two of those, and both of them were right in the middle of COVID, but I still managed to get 18 guys the first one and 16 guys the second one. Of those, one of the guys came to both of my getaways, and he has purchased one of the houses. And another guy came to the second getaway, and he not only purchased the house, he's my main investor in the project. Wow. Yeah.
Wow, cool.
Yeah.
That's so cool. So, okay, there are no gay bars, no gayborhood, but it doesn't really matter in El Pescadero.
No, and there's a lot of younger groups now that are forming beach volleyball, gay beach volleyball games, beach days, gay drag brunches have become very popular here. You know, I'm just at that point in my life. I live in San Francisco. I was at a bar every Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and sometimes Sundays for many years. Yeah. That's not that important to me. And to be honest with you, I can't hear anybody in the bar anyway when I do go. So, you know, lots of dinner parties. People have beautiful homes here. Lots of dinner parties, amazing restaurants, lots going out. About 15 minutes from Gaia 64 is Amaya Beach Club, and they serve food and they have amazing DJs and bonfires. And I love to go out there and listen to music and have drinks and appetizers.
It's so nice. Yeah. It's like paradise.
Yeah.
Okay. So all of these homes, did you say, what were the bedrooms? Were they 3 or 4 bedrooms?
There's 3 and 4 bedrooms. Yes. And let me explain the way we're doing this. We're actually selling the lots right now. So the lots start at 280 and go to 310. Once you purchase the lot, $30,000 of the price of the lot goes to architectural design and or build out. The reason we're doing this is we have 2 floor plans. If you like our floor plans and you don't want to make any changes, then that $30,000 goes to the building price. If you like, we don't like these floor plans, we want to design our own house, then we have an architectural team that will design the house for you. Depending on how much time you take designing the house, that $30,000 will go into the design. Whatever you have left over goes to the build out. So far, like I said, we have 4 people, including me, but there's 4 of us. Everybody has chose to use the designs that we come up with. They're really well thought out and they're really great floor plans. We'll close on the lots in January and then we'll start building. Baja Sur is probably the most expensive state in Mexico to purchase land. And that's the thing that I have so many friends who, even before Gaia 64, are like, oh, Lou, we'd love to buy a beach house, 4 bedrooms on the beach. And they think they can get it for like $500,000. You can't get that anywhere in Mexico anymore, but it's not going to happen. This is the thing. If you purchase a house for, let's say, $1 million anywhere you'd want to, like on a beach community in the United States, the house would be structurally not as well built as this house. The materials, everything that you're getting for that is much greater. But more importantly, your taxes on $1 million is like 0.1%. So depending on how much you pay for your house, you're going to be paying anywhere from $600 to $800 a year in property tax. We also have a bank handling fee, which, because you're an American, your deed is held in a trust. And if anyone's interested, I do have some paperwork. I can be happy to email them about that. But that's about $500 a year. If you're a permanent resident here, once you turn 60, you get 50% off of your property tax. You get 20% off your utilities. They're already much better than they are in the United States. And you also are entitled to other discounts. You get a little senior card, and it's issued by the state.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't you say like property taxes was something like $800 a year?
Yeah, it's like $800
a year. And you get half of that,
yes,
if you're over 60?
Yes.
Pretty good deal.
It's a very good deal.
You're not going to find that anywhere here.
Yeah. And insurance is cheap. Matter of fact, a lot of people, and again, I sell homes to people who are buying $4 or $5 million homes. A lot of people don't even insure their homes for like disasters, like floods and hurricanes, because everything here is cinder block and cement. Your roof is cement. So even if worst case scenario, we get hit by a really bad hurricane, you have to replace your windows and a few rugs. That's cheaper to do every 10 years than it is to be paying for disaster insurance.
So I guess you do get hurricanes there?
We do. So Pescadero is high enough up that it doesn't really get hit.
Oh, you just got one.
Yeah, we just, well, that was San Jose. Yeah, but it it didn't touch land, that one. It, we just actually, it ended up being very nice. It was lots of rain and some wind. They're saying as the Pacific warms, the hurricanes, which we saw this last one, it actually hit land in the United States rather than Mexico. So yes, we do get hurricanes. But I lived in San Francisco where there are earthquakes. And if you had to tell me, would I prefer a big earthquake or a big hurricane? I'll take a big hurricane any day. You get, we get a week's warning. You're able to be ready for
right, and prepare.
Yeah.
Okay. And do you, does Mexico have flood zones? Like, do you have flood zones where, you know, you would need to buy insurance in one area versus another?
No, we have arroyos. They're very specific areas. And if you were, if you purchased along an arroyo, you would maybe worry about that. Our lot, and I wish I could say I was smart enough to have thought of it or looked into it, but our lot is actually Elizabeth, who owns, who's the farmer who I mentioned earlier. She told me she owns a lot on either side of my lot. And she said it's the best area because of just the elevation. Even when we get heavy rain, it never floods. She said even the road doesn't flood. So
awesome.
That's pretty nice. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay. So is there, are you walking distance to like pharmacies, groceries, markets? How far is the hospital?
So we are walking distance to a really great restaurant. So we'll be walking distance to two great restaurants. We are a 5-minute drive to Agrocole. Because of Pescadero and Todos Santos being what they are, there's no big chain store. So you're not going to get the big grocery store. But we do have the little produce stands everywhere. We have the fishmongers. We have the butchers. So it's a little more old school. But it's actually, I love it. I think it's great. I have big grocery stores here in San Jose, but I still tend to go to some of the smaller places. The people who, it's usually family owned. They get to know you. They get to know what you like. They'll even hold things for you sometimes. A lot of times, like where I live right now, I have a fisherman who he comes up and he just honks his horn and you go out and he's got the fresh fish that they caught that day and you just buy it from it. Super cheap. It's a, it's been caught like an hour or two before you, you get it. So it's really fresh.
That's like old USA.
Yeah.
So when I was growing up in New York, we had a butcher, we had a baker.
Yeah.
I was going to say candlestick maker, but, but we had a fish store. You know, we had all these different, you know, separate stores, and they were kind of, they were better to me than just going into a supermarket and getting some, you know, something on display or some frozen stuff.
It's fresher. I mean, it's simply like the produce you're buying, it doesn't need to be picked before it ripens because it's not going to be sitting in a truck for a week.
Right.
It's been picked the day before. Eggs, nobody refrigerates their eggs here because they're fresh and they don't, there's like a little protective membrane on the outside of the egg. In the U.S., we clean that off, so it's why eggs spoil faster. There is a really big grocery store, a really great grocery store about an hour away in Cabo San Lucas. And there's a Costco is an hour away. There's a Home Depot an hour away. And it's a beautiful road. Like, that's something that I was shocked when I got here because the highway here is better than the highways in the United States. I used to think when I moved to Arizona, I thought they had really great highways. And I feel like they're not as good as they used to be, but they're still pretty good.
Yeah.
And it, they're as good or better than Arizona. So they're beautifully paved. You have an amazing view. The only thing is you have to be very alert because there's goats, donkeys, and cows that will be crossing at any time.
So speaking of vehicles, do they accept your U.S. driver's license?
They do. It's... everything's very gray here in Mexico when it comes to things like that. If I live here, I should have my own driver's license. If you have a Mexican driver's license, you need to have a car with a Mexican plate. And if you brought a car in from the United States with a U.S. plate, you have to pay an import tax, which is kind of costly. So I've been here for 5 years. I'm getting ready to buy a new car. I will buy a car here in Mexico, have Mexican plates, and then I'll get my Mexican driver's license.
Gotcha.
And how you get your Mexican driver's license, I probably shouldn't say this on the air, is you pay somebody who goes and takes a test for you. And then he calls you and says, come in 20 minutes, they're going to take your picture.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
I'm for that. I hate driving.
Yeah.
So how easy is it to make friends? That's a big thing for me. Yeah. Like, especially going to a different country with a different language. How's the expat community? Is there a big expat community? Do you know the locals?
It is, and it's so funny. We always joke about it because I hate using the term expat, but I also don't like the word immigrant. Because I don't really feel like I'm an immigrant either. I wish there was a different word because expat kind of usually means it's when Americans live in an American community in a foreign country. And I'm sure there's a lot of people like that. There's a lot of very high, very expensive gated communities here where the people keep within themselves. But the group of people I'm with, we like going everywhere. We like doing the high-end touristy stuff, and we like doing the local little taquerias and stuff like that. And I have an equal mix of nationals and Americans who live here either full or part-time. You know, I kind of liken Baja to like maybe what San Francisco was in the 50s and 60s, in the sense of before it started to boom in the 80s, there weren't a lot of people living here. So most of the people, whether you're American or you're Mexicans, they moved here from either the mainland or from the United States. And if they're Mexican, they moved here for better life, to get a job and to, you know, raise their kids in a new environment. So they're very happy. It's a very open community. They've left behind that conservative Catholic background. You don't see a lot of churches here, so you don't have that conservativeness. And for the Americans that are here, most of us moved for better quality of life. We didn't move here for a job. We didn't move here for school. So our mindset is different. And we also, I moved here by myself. I knew nobody, you know? So I made a point of meeting people. So I find it very easy to meet people. And actually, I joke and say my social life is probably as booming as it was when I was in my 20s. I mean, some nights I just have to say, no, guys, especially from November through March, it's like, I could go to a dinner party or out to eat with somebody every single night. You know, sometimes you just have to say, no, I'm just staying home tonight. Yeah.
Yeah. Gotcha. Very popular.
Anybody. I mean, if you are somewhat social, it's very easy to have strong friendship.
That's good. It's important, especially in a different country too. So I think it's very important because if you didn't have anybody or friends, it could be a little isolating and there's culture shock as it is, and this makes it a little bit better and easier.
And Baja Sur is a little different than the rest of Mexico. I mean, property is, for the most part, is bought and sold in U.S. dollar. Most places take U.S. dollar. A good majority of the people speak English as well as I do or better, and the other half at least can speak a little bit, understand. So it's very easy as American to adjust here.
Okay, so language, you don't have a problem at all?
Nope.
With language? Most people speak English?
They do. Honestly, the problem with me is it's all ego-based. I get embarrassed that I'm going to look dumb.
Mess up.
And I need to practice more because I think that it's rude to live in a country and not know the language.
And I think if you try and they see that you try, they'll be very gracious about it.
Sure. And also a lot of the people who work in the power electric companies, the water company, the police officers, a lot of them are the ones who don't speak English as well because they don't have to for their job.
Right.
So those are the people that can be the most frustrating if you don't speak their language. You know, when I first moved there, they deliver my gas because we don't have piped in gas. You know, you have to have your gas either filled or a tank delivered. And for the first year, I had to call a neighbor up and have her help me get gas. And then you just finally have to learn what to say. And now I understand. I can kind of have a conversation with my gas person.
That's good. Yeah. That's good. Yeah, it's important. It's important to know at least the basics, I think, if you're going to any country.
And again, it's a respect thing. I mean, look at America, how upset they get that Spanish is put in stores and this is America. And then those same people come to Mexico and get upset that the menu is in Spanish. They go, I can't read this. It's all in Spanish. It's like,
exactly. I always say, like, if you have foreigners come to the United States and they're speaking their native language, Oh, I know. There's so many Americans here who get so upset and bent out of shape. Speak your language. Can't you speak English? It's so rude. You know, put yourself in their place. You know, they're just trying to make a life. So, all right. Tell us, what's the local economy like? So you say Baja Sur is expensive, probably one of the most expensive places in Mexico. Tell us a little bit about that. What does it cost for utilities and so on?
So it's funny, because I'm here and I have a lot of Mexican friends, all I hear is how expensive it is here. And then I go to San Diego or even Phoenix, and then I'm like, okay, we're still a lot cheaper, a lot more affordable. This is it. You, for eating out places like that, you can go to a California-style restaurant like Flora Farms. It's this beautiful restaurant. Everyone wants to go to it. And it's going to be about $75, $85 a person, you know, more if you're a drinker. But there's these great little restaurants. You know, we went to this great new Italian restaurant and really great meal, and it was, you know, $20 a person, and we had cocktails. So you get a little bit. And then there's a little taqueria where if you want two tacos and a beer, you can get it for $10 or $12. So you have a lot of choices that way wise. My landlady pays my utilities for me. I pay for gas because I have to order it, but she pays for electricity and water. And she does it like every 6 months. And the first time we didn't do it for 8 months. And she sent me the bill and she said it was going to be $8,000. She just wrote $8,000. I was like, $8,000 for, you know, like, oh my God. And she's like, no, pesos. So that's basically $400. So my water and electric for 8 months was $400.
That's pretty good.
I live in a very small house. I'm not a big AC person. Like, I mean, so I do live more conservatively only because I don't like those. I don't like air. I grew up in San Francisco Bay Area. I'm not really into air conditioning. And
what's the climate like, by the way? Does it get hot and humid?
It does.
Or is it dry?
You know, Pescadero actually has, I think, nicer weather than Cabo. It stays around 3 to 5 degrees cooler, and it's a little less humid. So during the summertime, well, June and July, it's in the 80s with just very slight humidity. August, September, October, it's in the 90s up to the high 90s with about 60% humidity. Honestly, August is never really bad. You know, the worst month for me is October, and I think it's just because I'm done. I'm tired of the heat.
The heat.
The thing about it is September and October are the two worst months for me because, one, a lot of restaurants close for season. Less now because we're starting to have more of a year-round season, but things close. They board up in case of hurricane. Everything's outdoors, so you don't have as many air-conditioned restaurant choices. So those are the only 2 months that I've read. August, September, September and October for me. But November is my favorite month. It starts to cool down. So your days are in the 80s. The humidity is pretty much gone, but the water is still warm from the summer. And if you get there before Thanksgiving, all the stores and restaurants are open and they've got their fresh paint. Everyone's excited about the season. So it's a really nice time to come. And then pretty much your days are in the 70s and 80s till the end of March, even into April. And your evenings drop down to a cold evening here might be 55 degrees. That's the coolest
evening. I can deal with it.
Yeah. Pescadero gets a little cooler. I mean, you're in the evenings during the winter, you're going to want a light sweater or jacket.
I was going to say, ooh, I need a sweatshirt.
Yeah, a little bit, but I don't have heat in my house. We don't have the extremities, with the exception of a hurricane, we don't have the extremities like other places where we don't get extreme cold and we don't get extreme heat.
That sounds almost perfect to me.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yep. Very good. Excellent. So how about the arts and culture scene? Is there any arts and culture around or nearby, or do you have to go to Cabo?
No, there definitely is. Todos Santos is a huge community of artists from California, from the United States, who've moved there to be able to retire. So there's tons of art galleries in Pescadero, and they do art shows and things like that. You know, I kind of feel like Mexico is going through this beautiful renaissance right now. If, you know, maybe it's more apparent to me because I live here, but if you look what's happening, their cuisine it used to be tacos and tequila, but their chefs are getting Michelin stars and getting great recognition. Their architecture is, you're starting to see it influence the United States and other places in the world. Their artists, their fashion. I mean, it's really a good time for Mexico, and it's very exciting to be here. Also, what I love is flights within Mexico are really affordable. So it's very, like, for me to fly from here to Phoenix, the cheapest I can get is like $650 round trip. I can fly to Mexico City, which is the same distance, for about $120 round trip. I don't need to rent a car when I'm there. You can get a nice Airbnb for $40 or a really good, nice hotel for about $250. So it's really affordable. There's Zipolite, which is growing and it's really interesting. There's San Miguel de Allende. I mean, there's so many great places, and it's really affordable to go to, which is nice.
And Puerto Vallarta, how far is that from you?
It's Puerto Vallarta is, we don't have a direct flight to Puerto Vallarta, but you can fly to Mexico City or Guadalajara and then drive. Yeah. Yeah. And if you want to take a 12-hour ferry, you can take a ferry from La Paz to Mazatlan. You can drive your car right up there.
How long is the flight time to Guadalajara? Do you know?
Oh, to Guadalajara, like an hour, 20 minutes.
Hour?
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, again, it sounds really good. So arts and culture, back to arts and culture.
Yes.
Can you get local?
Yes, there's actually a lot of little kind of touristy stores right in Todos Santos. But once you're leaving Pescadero, there's some beautiful rug weavers that weave rugs. And one of them in particular, he uses all vegetable dyes. And his colors are a little bit more modern. They're not the traditional like oranges and browns. He does softer colors. Yeah, and there's welders, interesting welding art, and definitely...
Any museums or live theater around? Or you have to go to Cabo?
But there's the film festival that I mentioned. But as far as music, it is endless, the amount of music. There is all of, between Cabo San Lucas, San Jose, and Todos Santos and Pescadero, almost every restaurant you go to will have some kind of band playing. And when I moved to San Jose, I was told that it was this very strong music culture. So here I thought that I was going to learn all about this Latin music and it was going to be just really exotic and new. And it's like, they love 70s rock.
Really?
Yeah. So you go to this restaurant and someone sounds just like David Bowie. He can't speak a lick of English, but he sounds just like David Bowie.
That's so funny. I was thinking of like mariachi.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's some of that, but it's a fusion of everything. There's an amazing Cuban band that plays and she's wonderful. And they travel. You'll be at a restaurant in San Jose and then you'll be in Cabo San Lucas and then you'll be in Pescadero and you're like, oh, I saw them before. You know, it's easy to travel around.
And I've noticed in Mexico, they have a lot of street performers or singers that just sing on these stages along the, you know, by a park or wherever it's located.
We even have, at the stoplights, we have people juggling fire and hula hoops and clowns that try, and then, you know, they stop at the light and then they, as the light turns red, they hold their hand out for money.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. So, are you a foodie? We discussed a little bit about food, about the person that has that restaurant.
Yes.
And there are 5-star Michelin-rated restaurants around?
All right. I don't think we have any actually Michelin-rated, but we do have amazing restaurants. And we have some chefs that have received accolades and acknowledgement. But yes, I am a foodie and my group of friends are foodies. That is like, and if you actually saw us all together, you would be like, that's an unusual group because we are of every shape, size, age. But the thing we have in common is not only do we love eating really good food, we love preparing and serving good food. So that is for my group that the bond that has kind of pulled us all together. And it's not just Mexican food. You can get some amazing Mexican food here, but there's good Italian food. There's a new restaurant that does pho in Pescadero, and she only does it on Sundays. And you don't have to pre-order it, but if you text her on WhatsApp and let her know you're coming and what you want, she'll make sure she doesn't run out. And she makes her own bone broth and all that type of stuff.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool. So Sounds like we won't run out of restaurant choices.
You can eat out every single night for probably 6 months without repeating a restaurant, maybe more.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. How about, does Pescadero have any public transportation, so to speak, any buses, or is it all car?
They do have buses. They actually have a good bus system, and I wish I could say I was a better bus person. I'm not, but I have friends that take the bus. I have a friend that comes from Guadalajara for work, and he just takes the bus from the airport to the bottom of my house, and then I pick him up, and he just doesn't mind doing it. So there is buses. This is the thing, because Pescadero is not, there's not a central town, you need a car. You do need a car. The nice thing is Gallo 64 is located on a straight road that's a 2 minute drive from the highway. So it's far enough off the highway, we don't have highway nodes, but it's a quick, easy shot to the highway.
Got it. And is it a tourist location? Are there many tourists? You said no.
Yeah, you know what? Cabo obviously is huge. Pescadero doesn't have as big as tourists, but we have amazing surf beaches. So it is a very big destination for surfers.
Surfing.
And you know what I've noticed in Pescadero, because I'm there a lot, obviously, I've noticed there's a lot of young families, which I feel like maybe they're moving there, doing homeschool, their children or something. I see, you know, this one, they must live close to us. There's a pretty blonde woman and she's got three little towhead kids and they're always walking with their wheelbarrow or their wagon and their bikes. So there's some amazing hotels that are opening and they're kind of more of that low carbon footprint. They're not big hotels. They're one or two stories. A lot of them are one story, just little kind of casitas, beautifully done, great linens, all that type of stuff. And they're not cheap. Most of them start at around $650 a night, which is a great selling point if someone wanted to purchase in Gallo 64 and also use it as a rental property. If you've got a hotel rooms renting for $650 a night and you have a 4-bedroom, you could very easily rent that for $650 or more a night.
$650?
Yeah.
Or pesos?
Dollars, US dollars. Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah.
That is expensive.
Yeah.
All right. So tell us about... Everybody wants to know about the crime in Mexico. So tell us about the crime or lack of crime. What have you experienced?
It's so funny. And I tried to think about when I first moved to Mexico. I remember, like, even though we came to Mexico as a child, when I was a family, my parents liked coming to Mexico. But when I was driving down, I was reading all these stories about be careful, don't drive at night. And I was like, oh, they're going to like pull me over at night. Well, no, you don't drive at night down the peninsula because the cows and animals like to lay on the street because it's warm. Black cows warm at night and you can't see them and you hit them and you crash. That's why you don't drive at night. The crime right here is so much less than in the United States. I mean, per capita, Mexico's crime rate is less than the United States, I believe. America has a way of, if there's a shooting in Chiapas, Americans just know there's a shooting in Mexico. I mean, and that would be like saying someone got shot in Chicago, but now you're afraid to go to Phoenix. And that's what I hear happens a lot. The crime here, for the most part, is petty crime. And I think there's probably more of it, probably in Cabo San Lucas, because it's Cabo San Lucas is more of like the spring break. Young kids drunk, and it's easy to pickpocket them and con them and do that type of thing. So you have a little bit of that.
And assault weapons are not legal.
Yeah, and pepper spray is not even legal here.
Oh, guns.
Yeah. So people do have guns, but not to the case here. Honestly, if there is a violent crime here, since I've lived here, there's been two violent crimes that I've known of. And it was, everyone talked about it, it was a very big deal. And just think about violent crimes in Phoenix, how many probably happen a day.
Yeah.
So I do feel safe. I tell people as a gay man, if I'm in San Jose and I've had drinks with friends and I'm walking in my car and I'm going down a side street and three young guys are walking the other direction, I don't even think about crossing the street. Usually they're waving and saying hello. Since I've lived here, I have very few crimes that I've heard about. You know, recently I did hear about someone that was in a bar and they got hit in the head with a bottle, but it was a drunk person. And again, that happens in the United States. So
right.
I think
it happens
that
everywhere.
Whenever something happens, everyone's like, oh my God, it's in Mexico. Is it safe? And I feel it's very safe here.
There's no mass shootings. That's a plus.
Yeah.
Except if you're involved in the wrong things.
Well, and that's what I tell people. They go, is there a cartel? I'm like, just don't be buying cocaine and,
right.
and going to, getting hookers and stuff like that and going to those type of parties and you'll be fine.
Right. Yeah. Right.
That being said, marijuana has been legalized in all of Mexico.
Oh.
But what the government has done is they're allowing each state to create their own laws. So most of the states haven't really established anything, but we're starting to see things happening here. So I think that, I'll be honest with you, I'm not totally clear on the law because people have told me different things. But I think that as long as it doesn't look like you are looking to sell, if they find, you know, small amounts on you, it's not a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. All right. So crime's not bad. How about homelessness? Is there a homeless population?
No, and this part's hard. You don't see homeless for several reasons. One is I think the family structure here is very different than the United States. But also we have – there's little communities that are very poor that are up in, you know, out of sight, so we don't see it. But that being said, they're not homeless. It's a community. It's sad to see it, and, you know, it's part of – Mexico and Latin countries, I think, but it's very small compared to most other places. But you don't see, usually if I see someone that sort of looks homeless, it's probably some surfer dude that's here for the summer. And
yeah,
you know,
so but yeah. family yeah. is different too. Outside of the United States, family really takes care of one another a lot in most cases, and they won't allow somebody to be living on the street, you know.
Well, and you know, in the United States, we're raised, my family, we were raised to grow up and follow your dreams. So it didn't, you would move to another state or another country. Where here, families, it's, you know, like my grandparents are Italian and my relatives are a little similar to the way I see the culture here is, you know, you stayed at home till you got married. You didn't move out at 18.
Right.
And in some ways, that's nice because you don't create that some of the debt that you would have from living. So I do think that makes a big difference. Also, I find parents, grandparents, grandchildren, they all go out dancing and drinking together. You know,
right.
So the parents and grandparents know that, you know, they can say, my child doesn't do drugs. And you're like, how do you know
every
that?
Generation.
Yeah, because they're out with us on Friday and Saturday.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
They know where everybody is.
Yeah. That's here a little bit, even with the gringos, you know, it's a little tighter knit and families all go to the restaurant and hang out together and stuff like that. So I have friends who are Americans, but were raised here and they have stories of like everyone going to the same restaurant every weekend and the kids running around on the beach and the parents drinking and playing and having fun in the restaurants and stuff like that. So
it's nice. It sounds nice. Yeah. Enjoying life. That's what that's called.
Yes.
That's important to enjoy life. So, okay. How about the healthcare? Are you close to a hospital? Have you ever used the healthcare? And do you have private healthcare and public healthcare? And how does that work?
So, yes. And you can get insurance here, like an expat insurance. And it's, you know, they don't have pre-existing, same conditions. As the conditions, same as Obamacare has. But if you're fairly healthy, your insurance is very reasonable here. I think it can be as low as $3,000 a year. But you really don't need it. A good example is last August, I went to Provincetown and I had a cold, but I was on vacation. So I ignored the cold and I came back to Cabo and I just had this terrible cough and my chest was killing me. And I went to an ear, nose and throat specialist and she charged me $20 for the visit. She had me walk across the street to H Plus, which is a brand new hospital. It looks like you're walking into a museum, state of the art, everything. I made my appointment for my chest x-ray. I sat and waited for 15 to 20 minutes. They did my chest x-ray. Then I walked across the street to my doctor's office. She already had the x-ray. And she said, you have an infection in your lungs that's working into pneumonia. She gave me an antibiotic. She took my temperature. She said, take your temperature tomorrow and text it to me. So that was, tomorrow was Saturday. So Saturday I get a text from around 10 o'clock. Did you take your temperature?
And what doctors are around on Saturday?
I know. I said, no, I don't even have a thermometer. She's like, please go buy a thermometer and take your temperature. She's like, do it now. So I did. And I took it and I said, it's not high. She's like, okay, please send me your what your temperature is tomorrow. She checked my temperature for 5 days in a row. And I asked her why. And she said, because I gave you a low grade antibiotic. And if your temperature goes up, I want to give you a higher dose. But I didn't want to give you a higher dose if you didn't need it. All of that care cost me $60. And then on Monday, she sent me a picture of an air purifier and a dehumidifier that she saw at Costco. And she said, please pick this up. This will help you with your cough.
Oh, God. So wow, that's unbelievable.
It is a part. And this is what I tell people. You could probably get the worst medical care of your life here or the best medical care of your life. It's affordable. I was seeing my doctor in Arizona up until last year. And the point is, even though I could get in with him whenever he, at 58, he last year was like, you should go to a cardiologist and do all of that stuff. And to try to get appointments.
Oh, here?
Yeah. Here, it's virtually impossible. You know, 6 months out, 3 months out, I came back home. And if you call on Monday before Friday, you will have an appointment.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Here it takes forever. And I'm like, what's wrong with this place? And I hear stories, I interview people from Europe.
Yeah.
And they're on their private healthcare, let's say in Europe. And they have doctor's visits. I mean, doctors will come to your house.
Same here, $20 and it'll come to your house.
That's unbelievable.
And he pulls up in his Mercedes. So he's doing, and actually I have a friend who's a doctor. Well, it's a friend of a friend who's a doctor in Mexico City. And they asked him something about the cartel. And he's all, you have the cartel and it's much bigger than the cartel in Mexico. And she's like, what's that? And he's like, it's your insurance company.
It's true.
Yeah. And he
it
said,
is
they,
very true.
They force you to pay money and then they don't take care of you. He's like, at least if the cartel's taking money from you, they take care of you.
Right.
Yeah.
Insurance companies, yeah, they screw you.
Well, and another time I had a friend in the hospital. He was in ICU for like 4 or 5 days and in the hospital for like 12 days. And at one point, his cardiologist came in and had brought cookies that his wife had made, and they were for diabetics. And he said, hey, I know that you and your wife are arguing that you can't have dessert anymore. My wife makes these cookies. And my family eats it, and don't have diabetes. We just love them. And he goes, here, I had her bake you a batch, and I translated the recipe into English for you. And then he sat and ate them and talked with us. And I said, oh, are you off your shift? And he goes, no, I just don't have an insurance company telling me how much time I can spend with my patients. Yeah.
Yep. That's the difference. So do you keep your insurance from the States at all?
I do. I'm right now working on getting some kind of, and it's just been laziness doing the expat insurance because I do keep it for, for me, if I have a brain tumor or something tragic.
Right. And you keep an address in this.
I keep an address in the US. Yes. Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Also car insurance. We should talk about car insurance. So cheap. I was paying like $280 a month when I was in Phoenix. I pay $320 a year and I have amazing car insurance here.
Wow. It makes a difference. It totally makes a difference. So are you walking distance to a hospital?
No.
Or a doctor?
There's – because I'm in San Jose, I'm super close to doctors. Because I'm not living in Pescadero, I don't know. I actually did reach out to a friend recently, and she said, oh, yes, there's several doctors here in town that will do house calls that are very good, but the hospitals, the big hospitals are going to be about an hour away.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a little hike.
It is. And
have an emergency.
Sure. But there are smaller hospitals and there are the big hospitals. So like there are ambulances and stuff like that. So if there was an emergency, there is a hospital that you could be taken to in Todos Santos, which is 15, 20 minutes away. And then if you needed
more care,
you could be transferred there, I'm sure, yeah.
Sure.
And I think it's a matter of time before there'll be the fact of there's the growth in Todos Santos, especially with people in our age range that are moving there.
Right.
So I do feel that it's just a matter of time.
Yeah, because we do need doctors in hospitals.
Yes,
the older we get.
Yes.
Even the gays.
Yes. Yeah. No. Well, that's part of the community too. You know, like we I don't know if I addressed this, but it's, oh, I did, about the having the casita that has a kitchen and it has its own entrance. It makes it very easy to have live-ins, and some of those people could be nurses or medical. I mean, the pay structure for nurses and things like that here are like the U.S. in the sense that we could have a nurse and her husband living on our grounds and be paying them something very reasonable for us, and it would still be more than that.
Yeah, that's something to think about too. And I understand, I think in Mexico, HIV meds are either free or very reasonable.
Yes, if you're a permanent resident, you can get into the program and your HIV medication is free and your blood testing treatment is free as well. Right now, like Mexico City also does PrEP, I believe, for free. We do not have that here yet, but there's a new organization, and actually I help raise money for them. It's my cause, and it's called AliadX, and they are this young group of incredibly smart kids from Mexico City that live here, and they do free testing and counseling, and not only for the gay community, but for the trans community and also for single mothers. And awesome. What they've got, it's great, is because there's still that macho closeted gay thing. And the funny thing is, you don't even have that here, but we have a lot of young kids that move here. They still have that shame from where they grew up, but now they're right in this town where they can be more sexually open, and they just don't. So what AliadX is trying to do is educate people. So they have a clinic where you can go privately and get tested, but they also do big not gay themed nightclubs, and they have someone out there testing you and counseling right there in front of the nightclub.
Wow.
So they're trying to take the stigma away, and we're working with them to maybe even have a gay doctor from Mexico City come like once a month for 3 days, so that, you know, it's more about the younger kids that are afraid to maybe go to a doctor because they don't want to tell them they're gay. But if it's a gay doctor right. and it's secret, blah, blah, blah. So yeah.
Especially if he makes house calls.
Yeah.
Just kidding. Okay. Excellent. So tell us about how you go ahead and obtain a visa to become either a permanent or temporary resident.
You know, it was, I don't know. I got really lucky because I think it's fairly easy for most people. I think the best thing to do is, if you want to do it, start the process in the United States before you come here. It seems like people who move here and then try to do the process from here, it seems much more difficult. When I decided to move here, I went to Arizona, which, by the way, Phoenix has a really great consulate. It's just not, you'd think it would be because it's so close to the border, but I know like LA and San Francisco's consulates really backed up and it's really difficult. Yeah. So it might even be worth flying to Phoenix and doing it. I went in, met with a woman. She was very nice. She was very helpful. She gave me everything I needed. I came back, I presented it to her, and I needed a letter from my bank. So I went back to my bank, got a letter. He didn't even have a letterhead. He had to just staple his business card to saying, yes, Lou Gallo has a bank account here. And I presented it to her, and she put like a little visa in my passport. And basically, and the law changes, so look into it. But when I was going, you had to have at least $100,000 in your bank account for at least a year, or have proof of making $4,000 a month for over a year or over 6 years or something like that. And I got permanent residency, and I actually got permanent where I can work. A lot of the times now, if you're over 50, they're giving you permanent residency, but you can't work. So if you want to work, you want to make sure you can get that. Most people don't care at that point. But once you get the stamp, when you either fly into Mexico or drive into Mexico, you have to stop at the airport at the border, and you have to get them to give you this little piece of paper that says that you came over the border. Once you receive that, well, you have like 30 or 60 days that you have to go to the consulate in Mexico and start the immigration forms and get everything going. And then I just hired someone. She charged me like $150. She did everything for me. I got here in October, and December is pretty much, they close like December 13th, like January 8th or 9th. It's everything shuts down here. So end of January, I got my permanent residency card. I don't have to leave and come back. I don't have to. I am a permanent resident. It's just permanent.
So if you weren't a resident, you would have what, 90 days to stay?
Yeah, I think it's 90. You can get a temporary residency too, and it allows you to stay longer amounts of time.
Okay. So there's a temporal residency and a permanente.
Permanente, right? See. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And great. I tell people, if you can qualify and get a permanent residency, I would do that than the temporary. Because a lot of people, I think, oh, we're not going to be living here. But I know people who live here 8 months out of the year, and they've gotten the permanent. And I think it's just easier to
get. Do you have to pay Mexican taxes?
Yes.
You do?
Yes.
So you pay your U.S. taxes first? Because
no, you pay your Mexican taxes first. Oh, and then the U.S. has an agreement with Mexico. So whatever you pay in Mexican taxes, you deduct from what you owe in the U.S. taxes. Oh, so you end up paying the same amount, whether you're right. Living, you're not paying double.
Because I know in Europe, I think it goes the other way. It goes, you pay your U.S. taxes first. And since the European taxes are higher, you pay the difference of percentages from the U.S. to the European.
Yeah, no, so here it's you pay.
It's the opposite.
Yeah.
Excellent. All right. So what do you wish that you had in Pescadero that you don't have that you might have had in other places?
You're going to laugh. I miss the olive bar at like the grocery stores in the United States, where you get all those, because we have just very specific olives here, and they're just not the same as the olives I love. So I miss that a lot.
I love olives.
I do too. And so that's one thing. But you know, I can't say there's, you know, when I first got here, the banking here was really frustrating to me, and I just hated it, and I thought it was stupid. And it's just different than what it is in the United States. And once you figure it out, it's not that big a deal. Going to the bank's almost like going to the DMV. You have to pick a number and you have to wait. And you have to. But then I realized
it's bureaucracy.
If I was in the U.S., I wouldn't have the time. I'd just sit and get on my phone and play some solitaire for 5 minutes or 10 minutes. I mean, that's the most frustrating thing, is that right there. You know, figuring out how to do your taxes, how it works. Things here are just, the United States is very black and white, which in some ways is wonderful, and in other ways
it's
terrible.
It's very fast.
It is. Mexico
is very fast. It's like, Mexico is like laid back.
Exactly. It's very great. Matter of fact,
it's like my mañana.
Yeah. I sold a house to somebody who, they hadn't done their closing the right way when they closed like 8 years previous. So we had to do a double closing, and there was like a penalty, and it was a big penalty. It was a lot of money. And at closing, they were like, we told them, you may not have to pay it. And we're like, we don't know. And like, what do you mean we're closing? And like, oh, in America, we would know this. I'm like, in America, you'd be paying the penalty.
Right.
But, you know, so, I mean, there is a little bit more gray here in this that sense. And it can be very frustrating. The way I always look at stuff is like, it's very easy as a foreigner for me to come in and say what's wrong with Mexico. And it's very easy for foreigners to come in and say what's wrong with America, but right. We grew up with what's wrong with America, so we don't see it. So I try to just go with the flow,
right.
And not to find like, this doesn't work. This is better in the United States. I try not to do that, because that's just like a rabbit hole that you can go down. And it's like, I have people who get very frustrated. If you have a plumber come and he says he's going to come at 2 o'clock on Tuesday, he may not show up. You may not hear from him again, but he'll show up at 2 o'clock on Thursday with no apology.
Right. I'm here.
Yeah, I'm here. I showed up. People get really frustrated with that. But I also tell people, one of the reasons we moved to Mexico is we love that like kickback, casual atmosphere and that whole approach. And it's, if we want different. Everyone to be on time, everyone to be perfect, it's going to be uptight like the United States.
It's different.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Different. Like yeah. You mentioned banking. It's like, first of all, I don't even go into a bank in the United States. Yeah. I do everything online. And does Mexico even have online banking?
We do have online. It's much more difficult, which I've learned. A lot of the online banking procedures are the same in Canada and Europe. America has one of the highest bank frauds in the world. Because as Americans, we want convenience. So we don't want to, you know, like when I get on to get online at my bank account, I have my app on my phone and I have it gives me a token. Mm-hmm. I have to punch token in my phone, and then it gives me a new token, and I have to put that in. And every time I do a transaction, it makes me do a token. But it's preventing someone else from being able to do it. So if someone else gets information, they can't do it without having my phone and my computer.
And this is in Mexico?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So but it's secure.
I've been told it's very similar in like Japan and Europe and just not in the US, because we don't want to have to go through those extra steps.
Go through all of that crap. Yeah. Right. I hear you.
Yeah.
So that's great. Would you say there's any cons of living there?
I'm sure there is. Now, I'll be, the only time and the con might be is I do feel in September and October, it can be feel a little lonely being here, but only because everybody leaves. Even if you live here full time, everybody's on vacation. So you just want that to be your vacation time. But that's really the only thing. I mean, pretty much November through May, I feel like I'm in paradise. I love living here. There's so many places to go. You have the beach, we have waterfalls, we have great hikes. You know, you have the East Cape, which is a completely different beach experience than the Pacific side. And people come here on vacation or people come here for better. So it's a good place to live. I mean, me and friends talk about it. It doesn't have the most beautiful beaches in the world. It doesn't have the most beautiful terrain in the world. It doesn't have the most beautiful architecture in the world. But you combine it all together, and there is something very magical about it.
Sounds great. Sounds great. So in wrapping up, what would you say to our audience to thinking about relocating to Pescadero, especially, you know, they should look into Gallo 64?
You know, I think it's a great alternative to other places. If you're looking at places like Puerto Vallarta and Palm Springs, it's more affordable than Palm Springs. It's safer than Puerto Vallarta and has much better weather than those places. We've worked really hard to create this community. It's almost like a campground with really nice houses. And I'm going to be living there full time. And I do think that it offers everything for you. I mean, you have great weather, so you can be out and active pretty much year round. Great sense of community. You have farming, you have beach. It's the best of everything. You can go to my website and contact me directly. I'd be happy to share any more information. I have some information what a fideicomiso is, and that's purchasing in Mexico. And I can also go into more details about purchasing at Gallo 64.
Okay, so I will put that Gallo 64, GALO64.com in our show notes as
great.
Well. And so people could get in touch with you.
And next Tuesday, I'll post some pictures of us breaking ground and doing everything.
Yes, do
and
that.
I'll try to keep everyone up to date.
Yeah. Do that. I want to start putting some photos in Instagram.
Okay.
So people, I have an account set up for the podcast, Where Do Gays Retire Podcast, through Instagram. So people could take a look at that as well.
Great.
That would be great.
Great. And that's also my Instagram is I'll be posting constantly. And not only do I post about the development, I post about the areas, the restaurants, all that type of stuff. So
that's great, Lou.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming. We appreciate all the time you've taken and to talk to us. We really do appreciate it. Thank you so much.
I appreciate the opportunity. I've enjoyed talking with you and hope you come to Baja.
I absolutely will.
Good. I'll give you a good tour.
Thank you.
All right. Have a great day.
You too.
Thank you for listening to the Where Do Gays Retire podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe to our podcast and consider making a donation by clicking the coffee cup on any page at www.wheredogaysretire.com. Each cup of coffee that you buy costs $5 and goes towards helping us continue the podcast. Thank you for your continued support.